Welcome to The Road Untraveled. I'm your host, Brian Hollins. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Deepan and Vasu from Courtside VC, a venture capital firm helping early stage founders challenge the traditional definition of sports, digital media, fitness, and gaming. There's so much going on in that market, as well as the reintroduction of sports to our world, and it was great to get their take. We talk about building a company in these spaces, what a return to sports may look like, and also the revenue opportunity in gambling and in-game betting, and how some leagues may actually have to start relying on that revenue to subsidize the ticketing and other lost parts of their profit pool. Hope you enjoy the episode. This is The Road Untraveled.
Hey, Deepan and Vasu, how's it going?
Doing well, Brian. Okay. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Really looking forward to this conversation. Chatting sports, chatting investing, chatting being an entrepreneur in this wild environment. For anyone just joining us, Deepan and Vasu are managing partners at Courtside VC. I'll give another shout out to Kai as well, another good friend. Excellent team, and really looking forward to this discussion. Vasu, maybe we'll start with you. As a former hooper yourself, you know, what a wild time. The NBA is potentially starting to spin back up now. But, you know, just give a little bit of your thoughts on the sort of post-pandemic era and how you think sports and fan engagement and all those kinds of things are going to unravel over the next 3 to 6 months.
Well, I have it on somewhat good authority that we're actually going to make a real attempt to get the season underway. I until this morning, I would have told you I think that they're just saying the things they need to say to act like they've tried everything. But in the end, there's just too many moving parts here to do this safely. I think, as with everything, it comes down to liability issues and what happens if, God forbid, someone gets really sick. And they're in this bubble on Disneyland campus, and then it ends in a fatality, and now the NBA is at fault. I assume everyone's going to be signing some pretty serious waivers before they play. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, Damian Lillard came out and said, unless there's a path to the Blazers making the playoffs, he's not going to play. And I got to be honest with you, that's probably the right move for a man of that stature to say, dude, I'm not going to risk my life at this point if there's no path for us making the playoffs. It's just pointless. So I think it's going to be really interesting. But a doctor that I did speak to this morning in the league did say that he felt very confident that the NBA was going to try and start the season up and finish it out. And so I think that's really exciting news for everyone. I think it's great for the fans. It's great for just overall positive outlook on life somewhat coming back to normal now.
Love it. Deepan, maybe for you, give us a sense of how you're thinking about some of the technology and opportunities in specifically this sort of live events and fan engagement world. I had someone on from the DraftKings innovation team, and you know, they obviously see a ton of new picked up engagement because it's all fantasy and kind of done on mobile. But what about some of the software that's used within the stadium or things that do really require a live audience in order to be effective? How are you thinking about investing in that ecosystem?
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, we are sports returning as a matter of when and not if. It feels like a very, sure, very long when. As Vasu alluded to, it's taken a lot longer than I think a lot of us would have liked, but we are on the path to returning. The great part about sports in general is it's a gateway globally, right? In terms of bringing people together, the amount of content consumption around sports has not waned. So there's a lot of pent up demand around it. So the belief, and I think we've seen this, you know, resulting in even the DraftKings stock or Penn Gaming stock, the belief is that once sports are back on, there's going to be a tremendous amount of engagement and momentum behind it going forward. You alluded to DraftKings and speaking to their innovation team, something we're looking a lot at around just engaging the fan is how do you include them in as part of the broadcast itself? So you look at something like in-game betting, where in Europe, it's 75% of betting action is in-game betting. In the US, it's closer to 20%. And so seeing different technologies, softwares, infrastructures, that's going to help facilitate in-game betting. You know, a lot of times it's the consumer facing layer of that is just what most people see. But on the back end, it's quite complicated. So you have latency issues, you have obviously getting the direct data feeds from the leagues in a lot of cases versus the broadcast because there's a delay. So there's a ton of infrastructure and technology that goes into the back end of that. And so we're looking at a lot of that. How do you further just kind of encompass what the fan wants when they want it? And how they want it on what device. And so, you know, that's one example where investors in a company called LiveLike that has created a really interesting software layer that sits on top of the mobile feeds for broadcasters. And so if you're watching a game now, a broadcaster on the back end can pretty much allow you to integrate into the broadcast, your Twitter feeds, potentially betting feeds on there. And other ways to really engage and interact with other people watching the games.
That's great. I'm up 32% on that DraftKings stock in the last 2 days, boys. Let's go.
I love it. I love it. I'm curious if you think we'll start, and I'll sort of open this up to either of you. I think there's a potential for a little better collaboration across sports. So, you know, the NBA, the NHL, the MLB, have all sort of been impacted. You know, maybe the NFL is a little lucky in not being in season, but everyone's being impacted by this. And so as far as sharing best practices go, I think you're certainly going to see a little bit better collaboration, a little bit more effective collaboration across the sports. I'm curious if you also see that from an innovation perspective. So does it become a little bit easier to sell a fan engagement solution across sports than it was before COVID, where people sort of said, you know, look, you got to pick a lane, you got to pick a sport. It's the only way to sell it because, you know, there's just too much friction trying to sell it across all the platforms.
I mean, from my standpoint, I would say broadcasters and media companies as a whole have missed out on a significant amount of revenue. And so now game on in terms of providing whatever kind of resources and access the fans want, which therefore is going to drive more viewership and lead to more brand dollars coming in. And so I think it's all equation of getting people to watch the games and developing kind of the most compelling of experiences in the absence of being able to go to a game, you know, watching on your television or mobile device or iPad, whatever the case is. You need to create something unique and really got to be able to make those brand dollars that you've missed out on over the last 4 months.
Vasu, do you think that those dollars get reallocated in a different way going forward? I'd imagine, you know, let's present a world where we do actually have stadiums full again. Do the dollars go back to traditional distribution channels, or do you think they sort of get moved and shifted in a way that we haven't seen previously?
I think you know, everyone's going to have to adapt or die now, and so this is sort of. Across the world, in every industry, I think these past 3 months have forced people to rethink, reinvent, and do things that they may have never even thought that they'd have to do. So I fully expect, even when it comes to brand dollars and advertising dollars, they're going to have to find, the teams are going to have to find unique ways, the leagues are going to have to find unique ways in which they can now potentially take a smaller set of games and still attempt to drive the same number of impressions. And so whether that means, shit, you're going to have to put a second patch on that jersey, or you're going to have to come up with some cool AR, VR technology stuff. You're going to have to enhance the broadcast to do virtual signage. I think all of these things that we had sort of seen as nascent technologies that were just being tested over the last few years, I would not be surprised if these 3 months basically acts as a catalyst and forces a mass adoption of these things over the next 2 years to make up for all this lost revenue. Because at the end of the day, look, this is perishable inventory. The game, the season's done. You can't make up for those games at any other point. And somehow you're going to have to make the people who spent money on the media rights and on the advertising dollars behind it whole. And so they're going to have to reallocate those dollars somehow.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Let's jump a little bit into the courtside portfolio. You know, I'm curious, as you think about how you're helping your different teams who, to your point, may have lost out on opportunities now, but are certainly getting ready for a ramped up opportunity on the backside of this when we do sort of get back to some state of normal. You know, what are some of the things that you're seeing teams put in place to prepare for that and sort of weather the storm along the way?
Yeah, we've had multiple companies, two at least thus far, that have already gave up their offices. And I think, you know, that is a trend we will continue to see. I think obviously if you're an extremely large company, you are making it work, like a Facebook and others that are making it very much optional on the work from home side. If you're a small early stage company, you know, theoretically you would say, well, it's really easy. It's a lot less people. But at the same time, there is a human interaction element where you're developing a camaraderie amongst a small team that is all going to battle together on a regular basis. And not being together certainly can pose interesting challenges. Now, I think that the goal is, without having an office, certainly you can still do a lot of Zoom calls, you can still meet up. But the notion of having to sit in an office and forcing people to go in, I just don't think makes sense for a lot of early stage companies, especially if you absolutely don't have to do it. And so, you know, I was talking to one of our companies this morning, early stage company, and it probably did cost them a little bit, but they sent standing desks, you know, large monitors to every single employee. And it was more so for the fact that we want you to be super comfortable at home. And, you know, there's absolutely no force. You come back to the office, they haven't even opened it, but once they do, whenever you want to. And it's less about having people in every day, but maybe you drop in once a week if you feel comfortable. And so it's, the flexibility is going to be absolutely key. You know, similarly, I think just the constant communication of ensuring that you're still doing team building events. It's obviously hard to do it digitally, but still really vitally important. I think without that and trying to being able to just continue to build the excitement around what people are building and working towards, you know, I think as a result of that, we may see some folks just end up leaving the companies in general, not these companies, but companies in general. So I think it's just, it's a tough middle ground where you don't want to force anyone to come back, nor should you, but also at the same time, ensuring that everyone feels the momentum behind what you're doing.
Let's chat a little bit about, from your perspective, just how to source in this environment. You know, to your point, maybe it is a little harder to get in front of teams, but there's certainly still software being built. There's certainly, you know, still companies building successful things right now. I'm curious how you guys are preparing to meet and source and vet companies in a remote environment, and kind of how you can get comfortable with some of the traditional things that you need to get comfortable with in order to back a team.
Everybody's looking for money right now. Whether you were normally planning to go out for a round or this pandemic has crushed your business and so you need money to stay alive, or whether things are going okay but you just don't know what the next 12 months are going to look like, there's been no lack of deals coming through. I can say that for certain. Mm-hmm. I think in general for our existing portfolio, we've certainly told people, listen, try to make sure you've got that 12 to 18 month runway. If you've already got it in the bank, great. If you don't, let's have a board meeting ASAP and try to figure out who's going to step up around the table, or do we have to go outside? Be prepared to pay a little bit more than you were ready to pay to raise that money. But it is what it is. The most important thing is making sure you survive. I think on the so in terms of sourcing, you know, there's been no lack of deals. It's continued on as normal. And if anything else, I'd say there's just as many, if not more, companies out there looking to raise capital. For us, we're always big on team at the early stages and meeting with them. And we've never done a deal without actually having to meet with the team, have them come into the office and pitch us and do what you have to do to try to build a relationship with the founders. Unfortunately, now I think that's all having to be done over Zoom and Hangouts. And I think there was probably a bit of apprehension the first 60 days of this thing, which is why a lot of people were not writing checks. It was, part of it was no visibility into what the world's going to look like. Part of it was everything's crashing around you. And part of it was, well, how do you do a venture deal without meeting with the founding team? But now I think 60 days in, everyone realizes, hey, you got to get back to work. You can't have a rule that says you're not going to write a check unless you're able to sit in a room with a founder, because that may not happen for another 12 to 18 months. And we're not going to be sitting on our money for that long and not doing deals. That's not what our LPs pay us to do. So we've been hopping on those Zoom calls multiple times a week, having all the team on there, having them pitch us, doing what they would normally be doing in person, but just over a video conference. And listen, shockingly, Zoom has held up quite nicely, having gone from 10 million to 300 million users or whatever they're at now. I mean, it's pretty impressive for their infrastructure to have scaled up that nicely. So we're continuing to do deals just off of Zoom at this point.
I'm at HBS, and you know, I'm in Zoom classes all day long with 95 people, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, the only thing we would have heard was if Zoom was crashing, and so we haven't heard anything, and that's why we're not as appreciative as we probably should be. But Zoom really has just become the lifeblood of not just the academic world, but the professional world as well.
I was talking to someone about this actually just a couple hours ago. It's worth just thinking back to 2-3 months ago and imagining that this is the life we would be living right now. Obviously from the personal side, but on the professional side, that majority of people, and we're very, very fortunate, I think all of us, where a lot of our jobs can be done digitally. But the fact that we've been able to port it on digitally, and business certainly is not, you know, as usual, but has continued to take place, I think is unbelievable. I would have never predicted that happening, nor did I see this coming in mid-March when things started shutting down. I think, you know, there's definitely resiliency. And to Vasu's point, our deal flow is actually going through yesterday. We've seen more deals on a weekly basis than we were prior to COVID.
Is that scary? Is there a red flag that comes with that deal flow, or are you?
Look, I think it ultimately, and one of our investors told us this, it is incredibly hard to be a very early stage company right now, raising money and not seeming like you absolutely need it or desperate to raise it. And so right. I think if you are raising right now and you're a large company that has substantial, you know, revenue, market share, raise a lot of capital, then certainly it might make more sense. But if you're an early stage company, it's hard not to seem desperate. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I would say we are still very cautious, because the verticals we invest in right now, especially fitness and gaming, a lot of people are trying to shift their models a little bit more to be a little more fitness focused or a little more health oriented to kind of appeal to the times. Now, I would say there are just as many really, really good companies out there looking to raise, because truthfully, it's a matter of luck. If you closed a round in Q1, early Q1 or late 2019, then even if your business fundamentals aren't great, you have capital in the bank. Whereas if you were planning to raise in Q2 of this year, you're in a really tough position. And so existing investors have had to step up in some cases. In some cases, you know, looking for outside capital is the only option. So it's a matter of luck in a lot of cases. And, you know, it's not fair to say one way or another this company is in a good position or not. So we're still diving in and spending a ton of time on new opportunities coming through.
Listen, either way, as long as you're not the guy who bought StubHub 2 weeks before the market crashed, you're doing okay.
In theory, though, it was a great move.
Hell of a move.
I love it. What are you guys reading right now? What are you sort of keeping an eye on? Any podcasts, things that you're excited about? That help you, you know, stay informed, but don't just talk about COVID all day. I'm curious if there's anything you started reading or picking up on that you weren't reading.
Listen
before.
To the Dream Team tapes on Apple Podcasts right now, man. That's where it's at. Like, forget COVID. Let's take our mind off of it for a while and listen to these crazy stories that they managed to capture from the 92 Dream Team. I think that was a perfect way to go it. From The Last Dance onto something else.
Last Dance was fantastic.
After those 5 weeks, I was in serious depression there. I didn't sleep that Sunday night till five in the morning, because I didn't know what I was going to consume next. But Dream team tapes are pretty good.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, watching as much kind of historical sports events as possible. I think I've rewatched every single Ravens playoff game, the Super Bowl, in their entirety. Really,
they're running out of stuff to show on ESPN.
But the NFL Classic games have certainly kept me motivated. I would say, in terms of what I'm listening to on podcasts, I love Stratechery. And so they recently started putting all their, or Ben started putting all this stuff on audio. And so having that on audio has been a game changer. So being able to listen to the stories every day, you know, I think that's always good. One thing I've really turned on to is Fit Insider. Hands down the best coverage around the fitness and wellness industry. They do really good podcasts, but they also have a newsletter. And that's always really good. That's a huge resource and has sparked a lot of ideas in terms of what we're looking at in the fitness side. And then I finished Ride of a Lifetime recently from the Bob Iger book, which was really good. You know, certainly it was very likely written before Disney started facing challenging times during COVID, but some, you know, it was a very good combo of just awesome stories to see how the big media world and works in general, but also the lessons he's learned. So it was, I would highly recommend that.
Last one for you guys. This has been super fun. I'm curious, just any advice you'd give to people founding a business right now. I think obviously it's a tough time to have the uncertainty of whether or not you should be building or whether or not you should try to go get a McKinsey or Goldman gig, but just curious, any advice you'd have for founders and builders?
I don't think anyone's hiring right now. So I don't think I'd be trying to go get that McKinsey job either. I think this is the best time to be trying to raise, to be trying to build a business. Now, it's certainly not the best time to be trying to raise money. I'll tell you that. I can tell you straight up a number of angels that like to do deals with us or do deals on the side. You know, you'd kick them a deal and they'd be writing that 25-50K check within 2 days without thinking twice about it. Now, you know, 3 months goes by, people are avoiding my calls, they're dodging my emails, and it just goes to show sort of where I think consumer sentiment is right now around spending money on anything that's sort of non-essential or at least not liquid. And so it is a tough time to raise, but a tremendous time to start. And so if you're a founder and you've got a team of one or two guys, ideally a technical co-founder, and you guys can hunker down for the next couple of months here, build a prototype, get an MVP going, maybe get a few customers, and then you come out in the fall, hopefully things are better, sports is back, consumer sentiment is higher, you should be able to raise capital. But no time like the present to start a business, because it's not like there's a better job waiting for you somewhere.
Whether you're running a fund, you're starting a fund, you're starting a company, you got to be realistic. I think, you know, the last 4 or 5 years have been up and to the right when it comes to entrepreneurship. One of the best things I read recently was something about the Stockdale paradox, which I wasn't familiar with, but really opened up my eyes. Really talked about how if you're overly optimistic, you may not necessarily succeed because you're going to mismanage really your own expectations and that of your own team. So being overly realistic, the example they gave was, you know, during POWs, during the Vietnam War, they were, you know, the ones that, I guess the example he was giving was the ones that really made it through those really challenging times were the ones who actually didn't set a finite date in their mind that we were going to get out by next week or next month or 6 months from now. But instead, they processed the reality as best they could to say, I'm going to continue to endure, but not setting kind of preconceived expectations in their mind and relaying that to other people. Because once you do, especially kind of bringing it back to the startup and entrepreneurship world, If you're not overly practical and realistic with your team or your co-founders, ultimately, the world we're in right now is not in your control. You cannot control the impact of COVID. And therefore, in those cases, you may end up being in a completely different position, or you may end up letting down a lot of people. I think that's how a lot of companies break apart, and a lot of people lose confidence in the CEO or the leaders of the companies. And so I think that's an interesting lesson that a lot of folks have learned, myself included, just either the hard way or hopefully through other people's learnings.
Under promise, over deliver, bruh. My middle name.
I love it. I love it. Vasu and Deepin from Courtside, thank you so much for being here.
Awesome,
guys.
Man. Thanks for having us on.
Really appreciate it. Okay. Take care.